Nigel Farage is an interesting character. He was the one-time leader of the Brexit movement in the United Kingdom. They called themselves the Independence Party. Kind of interesting, kind of ironic as we approach the 4th of July, and we're talking about a British Independence Party, but British independence from the New World Order, British independence from the economic control center of Brussels. Yeah, I know, it's the European Union. I get it. And why do we need a European Union? Why do we need one? Well, it centralizes things. It allows all the nations to cooperate with each other more clearly. One currency to compete with the United States dollar. One fake currency. One system of surveillance. One unified intelligence gathering service. You know, these things are important in 2020 and beyond. It's very important to surveil people and figure out where their loyalties lie. The last thing we need, the last thing we want, are, a bunch of free-thinking people who are just going to go out there and act unpredictably. They may support a renegade outsider like Donald J. Trump. And, we can't have that. Nigel Farage was kicked out of the banking world. No, not as a job. He didn't lose his job as a bankster. He lost his bank accounts. His UK bank accounts are being closed. He is considering leaving Britain. Nigel is. He's thinking about moving somewhere else. His bank accounts are being closed with, quote, no explanation or recourse. The politician and broadcaster blamed the establishment for the decision, adding in a video posted on social media Thursday that he had tried unsuccessfully to open new accounts with several other lenders. Here he is.
Hello there. Now, you would think, in the light of this, that I'd be pretty happy. I mean, you know, News Presenter of the Year, the Trek Awards was pretty cool, and a massive thanks to all of those people out there that voted for me. The establishment were, of course, appalled because they, in their little London bubble, think that I'm incredibly unpopular. Well, in Notting Hill, I might be, maybe not quite so, in the rest of the country. But actually, truth is, I'm not full of the joys of spring. I've been living with something for the last couple of months that may well fundamentally affect my future career going on from here and whether I can even stay living in this country. I have been with the same banking group since 1980. I've had my personal accounts with them since that date and my business accounts right through the 1990s while I worked in the City of London and in recent years too. I'm with one of the subsidiaries of this big banking group, one with a very prestigious name, but I won't name them just yet. I got a phone call a couple of months ago to say, we are closing your accounts. I asked why. No reason was given. I was told a letter would come which would explain everything. The letter came through and simply said, we are closing your accounts. We want to finish it all by a date, which is around about now. I didn't quite know what to make of it. I complained. I emailed the chairman. A lackey phoned me to say that it was a commercial decision, which I have to say, I don't believe for a single moment. So I thought, well, there we are. I'll have to go and find a different bank. I've been to seven banks, actually. Asked them all, could I have a personal and a business account? And the answer has been no in every single case. There is nothing irregular or unusual about what I do. The payments that go in and come out every month are pretty much the same. I maintain in my business account quite a big positive cash balance, which I guess with interest rates where they are, is pretty good for the bank too. So why is this happening to me? Well, one explanation is this. A few years ago, the European Union came up with a definition of somebody called a PEP, a politically exposed person. Now, this could range from anybody from a prime minister down to a local councillor. And I think the reason for it was, you know, were people in politics open to bribery? Could foreign governments from Ukraine or China or wherever else it may be, could they be pumping money into the accounts of corrupt politicians? So I kind of understand that and get that. But it's all about interpretation, isn't it? And what the banks argue is that to maintain an account for a politically exposed person gives them increased costs of compliance. Now, I have spoken to the city minister in this country, and there is some hope that this EU definition, which came into British law, may be moderated in some way. We'll have to see. But of course, any bank, any organisation can choose to interpret a PEP and whether they want the account in any way they choose. To my knowledge, I don't think anybody has been treated like me in the world of politics.
Politically exposed person, a PEP. Politically exposed person. How many of us are going to be defined as a politically exposed person? Yours truly, for example, just taking the risk of doing this radio show, which, by the way, I have become extremely fond of doing. I have been extremely fond of doing this show for you every day. It's one of the things that I look forward to. I'm not quite going to say that the rest of the day is a long downhill trudge from the moment I hang up this microphone and step off into the world to do other things. It's not quite that dramatic, but it's close. It's close, but is doing this radio show worth becoming a politically exposed person? An inconvenient person? You might be thinking to yourself, well, kind of, it's no big deal. Nigel Farage can't find a bank to give him a bank account. Just go get one in Switzerland. Just go get one somewhere else. Well, it is a big deal. First of all, there are way, way less banking groups in the United Kingdom than there are in the United States. So if Nigel has gone to 7 other banks, it's very likely that he has gone to practically every bank that could possibly bank him. And what does it mean to be debanked? What does it mean to be unbankable? This is a level of control that you and I really have not spent a lot of time talking about or thinking about, I suspect. And it will become one of those things that we are going to have to spend more time talking about and thinking about in the future. The processing of payments. The first time the processing of payments became a thing that we all started to notice was in the processing of payments for pot. You had this disparity between federal and state criminality of pot. Once pot became legal in Colorado and then in other places, it's practically legal everywhere now. Yet it remained illegal at the federal level. It's still a federal crime to buy and sell pot. Question is whether or not it is enforced. And therefore, the question is it even enforceable? This question changed how processors of payments behaved. The big payment processors in the beginning would not process payments for pot accessories. And then emerged a whole subgroup of payment processors who would, in fact, do that. And they were set up conveniently and chartered by states like Colorado. So what does that look like? Okay, well, if you're going to sell medical marijuana and someone comes in and swipes a debit card, at some point, somebody has to agree to transfer that money from the account belonging to the debit card holder into your business banking account. Someone has to process that payment. And the number of third-party payment processors who would process a payment like that just even 10 years ago was very, very limited. And if you cannot process a payment like that, then how can you transact? I guess you can only transact in cash, but nobody's transacting in cash anymore. See, that's the underlying weakness of this whole cashless society that they want us to be a part of. The cashless society that they want all of us to be a part of can be redefined as the controlled society. If we are cashless, then we are completely dependent upon payment processors. We're dependent upon the banks. Because our money resides in the banks. And it could be a big bank, a money center bank, Wells Fargo, Bank of America, Chase. And it could be a smaller bank. Wherever your money is, you are dependent on that bank processing your payments. Many of you out there in Crusader land, but not all, but many of you are W-2 employees. You receive direct deposit into your bank accounts every 2 weeks for your earnings, your salary, your hourly wages, whatever your compensation scheme is, you receive it via direct deposit into your bank account every 2 weeks. And then you use your bank account, your bank debit card, to buy things like groceries and gas, food. You may write checks. Some of you write checks still for your mortgage. Some of you are on auto payment. That payment is processed by your bank. Your bank agrees to send a portion of your monthly wage towards your mortgage, your car loan, your student loan, whatever. Now imagine if your employer cannot directly deposit your earnings into a bank account because you don't have a bank account. Imagine not having a bank account at all. What does your employer do? Well, then they cut you a hard check. Here's your check made out to John Smith. Here's your $2,000. Okay, what do you do with this check? What can you do? What are your options? Well, I don't have a bank account, so I can't deposit it anywhere. I guess I could go to like the gas station or a check cashing place. You could pay an exorbitant fee. What are they charging now? 7%, 10%? Okay, yeah, take $200 out of my check and hand me $1,800 back in cash. How do you pay your mortgage? With cash.